It's good to see everyone this morning. As I begin, I want to express my thanks and mention what Justin already has with regard to the diligence of all of you. Yesterday was an important day for us to express our duties to God individually. And we are told to rejoice with those who rejoice, and appreciate that so many of you were able to make it to Yvonne's 90th birthday party to rejoice with her and that and her family. And that was a great encouragement to her. And then the singing was just absolutely wonderful. I was hoping to hear the same volume. And I think the acoustics there were better than they are here, so I would like to see that kind of brought in. But this is an important thing that we do individually as Christians to express our love for our brethren and our appreciation and love for others, and seeing the faces of so many in that retirement home as they were listening, and some of them actually singing along with the old hymns that we sang. Just a wonderful thing to see. I saw a lot of joy on the faces, both of those who were there, as well as the singing that we, for our voices too, as we sang together. So that was a wonderful thing. I'm going to be this morning discussing the lesson on sanctification in the 9 o'clock hour, in order to allow Brother Tyler Hammack to have the 11 o'clock hour. We mentioned last week he's going to be preaching for us. I'm certainly looking forward to that. He's the preacher for the Indiana Avenue congregation in Lubbock, Texas, and we're actually scheduled to have him next spring in a gospel meeting. We're looking forward to hearing him today. But what I'm going to do is go over this very quickly. We don't have as much material as last week, but we do have some. So I'll kind of stay away from any extraneous comments and just go down my list. So if you will, bear with me in that regard. But we're following and continuing our discussion of moral issues with that emphasis upon sanctification. Today we're going to be talking about our speech. And I wanted to start off by noting just a couple of things. First, how ubiquitous profane speech is in our society. Now, where we talked about sight with modest dress in our lesson last week, now we're talking about hearing, different sense. But all that is necessary is to live around worldly people to know that profane speech is everywhere in our culture. It used to be if you heard it, you were listening to adult men, mostly, and the women and children, you didn't hear quite as much of that, but that's not the case these days. I've mentioned many times Joshua's experience with his students in high school, and it's just an atrocious thing. But it used to be that if someone was angry, you heard it. You hear it in movies, you hear it on television, you hear it when people are angry, when they're upset, when they're happy, or just as an everyday part of their speech. And maybe they're just bored and they express their boredom by the use of epithets and profanity. The second thing I want to note is just how hard it is to control that, especially if that's what you're familiar with and that you're comfortable with. And I recognize that that is the case, and it can be something that is difficult even for Christians as we live in such an ungodly society. I wanted to begin our time together by reading James chapter 3 and verse 8 and through verse 12, just so that you will know that our Lord understood the difficulties of controlling the tongue. He said that no man can tame the tongue. It's an unruly evil that is full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. And out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. And my brethren, these things ought not to be so. A spring does not send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening. Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. You see here, and in fact in that entire third chapter, or just about all of it, you see in James' words the theme of our lesson today as stated, my brethren, these things ought not to be so. And we ask the question, as we always do, well, why is that? So let's start off just with a short note again about sanctification. Because I believe sanctification is a primary argument that we can use in our fight against immorality, as I mentioned last week. It's the call that we have as God's children to be holy. Now, we're not going to be repeating the same verses every week when we bring this point up again and again. But don't worry, there is plenty of verses in both the Old and New Testament that establish the importance of sanctification. I want to note one today from Leviticus chapter 5 and verses 1 through 6, because it does talk about our speech a little bit. And of course, this was under the old covenant that God had with Israel, but it talked about some of the sins that came with their mouth. He starts off by saying in verse 1 that if a person sins in hearing the utterance of an oath, and that oath, the word there means a verbal curse or swearing, verbal profanity, and he's a witness, whether he has seen or known of the matter, if he does not tell it, he bears guilt. If a person touches an unclean thing, well, let's just go on down to verse 4. He said, or if a person swears. Now there we're talking about giving an oath, a promise, if you will. I swear that I will do this. But if he swears, speaking thoughtlessly with his lips to do evil or to do good, whatever it is, a man that may pronounce by an oath, that a foolish or rash promise, he's unaware of it when he realizes that it's foolish or rash, he shall be guilty in these matters. And with regard to both of those things, we're told in verse 5, when he shall be guilty in any of these matters, he shall confess that he has sinned in this thing. He shall bring his trespass offering to the Lord for his sin, which he has committed. A female from the flock or a lamb or a kid of the goats is a sin offering, so his priest shall make atonement for him concerning his sin. So I do want you to note from this that, as is the case under the new covenant as well, that God was not pleased with those rash oaths or even the taking of oaths that were done inappropriately, as well as that of cursing and swearing. And the reason why he did not like this is because it was a show of profanity. The word profanity, which is what we use for swearing in the sense of using dirty words or naughty words, it means that which is profane. And when you look in the Old Testament, profane things were not to be a part of God's people, whether it be profane food, whether it be profane actions, whatever it be that we're talking about. I want you to look at one other verse in Exodus chapter 40 in verse 12, which emphasizes the fact that God's people must be holy as they present themselves to Him. That's what He requires, that they present themselves to Him as holy. And in this case, it has reference to Aaron and his sons and how they should be consecrated for their service as priests. So he said, you shall bring Aaron and his sons to the door of a tabernacle of meeting, wash them with water, and put the holy garments on Aaron and anoint him and consecrate him that he may minister to me as priest. In other words, Aaron would not be justified in presenting himself as the high priest of God unless before he came to minister, to do the things that a high priest does before God, that he be in this way ceremonially and cleansed and pure that he might present himself before God as holy. It was the same thing with his sons in verse 14. Bring his sons and clothe them with tunics and anoint them as you anointed their father, that they may minister to me as priest. For their anointing shall surely be an everlasting priesthood throughout their generations. And so this idea of holiness, again, is what I want to use as we study these things. We want to start off by noting that corrupt speech is condemned. And what we mean by that is profanity, dirty speech. It would have reference to a number of different issues. But young people, I want you to think of this very, very clearly and carefully. I know that perhaps some of us have either felt guilty or had to stop watching a movie or cable TV because of excessive profanity. And you say, just why do they have to cuss so much? Why do they have to get movies, for example, to an R rating so that they are seen by the world in general? And cursing and profanity is often a lot of the reason for that. Well, it turns out it's more art imitating life than anything else. And I went and did a little bit of research on Google about why it is that the directors in these movies and the actors in these movies use profane speech. And really, it's the same reasons that they are used in everyday life. as stated, it's everywhere in our society. It's gotten far worse in the last couple of generations. And the rationalization given, let me give you a couple of examples. First of all, we're better able to express ourselves emotionally, and it offers catharsis if we cuss. It's a way to let out strong emotions and feel better. It provides the potential. Actually, this argument is made. It can keep us from becoming mentally harmed or physically harmed. The release, the catharsis can release anxiety and make us more healthy as a result of that. And that's an argument that is actually made. Some say it's social bonding. In other words, you use profanity, you cuss because your friends do, and it builds camaraderie and trust, and it demonstrates authenticity. And some actually indicate that people who cuss are more likely to be honest. It makes one feel like part of the group, and that's another argument that is used. Some say it is a way of emphasizing in communication. They can be used to add a punch or emphasis to a statement, making a point that is more impactful or memorable. And certainly there is truth in part to that, although there are legitimate words in the English language. Poets use them all the time. Individuals with good vocabularies use them all the time instead of using the same old cuss words every single day, time and time and time again. And even now, more in a professional situation, a boss may be addressing his employees and he cusses for emphasis to show the importance of some point that he's trying to make to grab attention on their part. And there are two others. One, this is funny. Pain relief. Do you realize that some researchers have concluded that cursing can bring pain relief? That if you stub your toe for an instant or two when you're cussing about stubbing your toe, that it doesn't hurt quite as much. I guess if you cuss longer, then the pain stays away just a few moments more, but that's a claim that some have made. And then there are other justifications. This way I can be aggressive but not be violent. I can exercise power or control over someone by the language that I use. And that's exactly the same reasons why it's used in film and cinema and other places. And the question is, though, what does God have to say about it? And there is a passage in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 8 that very clearly says, you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, and filthy language out of your mouth. Filthy language out of your mouth. Now, that's not a suggestion. That's not one of those commands of God that means less than another command would mean. That, okay, if I don't murder, if I pay my taxes, if I don't do this or I do that, that God's going to just let slide this language that I am in a habit of engaging in. But it doesn't really work that way, does it? Because if an individual is being profane, then he's not being holy before God. Now, what does it mean, the word filthy, in this particular passage? Well, it comes from the Greek word ahiskrologia, which means obscene or low and filthy speech. And so it would include using the Lord's name in vain. It would be used referencing scatological bathroom terms. It would be used regarding dirty jokes of every type. And so those kinds of things are not appropriate for the child of God. It is not a minor thing. And we need to recognize that as Christians. The world revels in it. They don't care a bit. It's part of their everyday speech, but it ought not to be so for Christians. But that's not the only kind of corrupt speech by any means. I've got a few others I want to note here. And basically, we're going to read through the verses here. Let's talk about gossip and slander. Proverbs 20 and verse 19, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, therefore do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. In Titus chapter 3 and verses 1 and 2, we are told to speak evil of no one. Be peaceable and gentle in showing all humility to all men. There's a really good contrast, isn't there? Don't speak evil, be peaceable, be gentle, showing humility to all men. And then we have also, in addition to that, we have the spreading of strife. spreading of division. Proverbs 16 and verse 28, a perverse man scatters abroad strife, and a whisperer separates chief friends. You've heard of that, almost campaigns to divide. Maybe there is some benefit that would accrue to the individual who brings two friends against one another. Maybe it might be you want to split them up so you could have something better than they do. Or maybe you would take one against the other in order to gain an associate of your own. But we are told that that's perversity, and it's something we ought not to be part of. A whisperer separateth chief friends. In Titus chapter 3 and verses 10 and 11, Titus 3 has a lot to say about perverse speech as well. But he tells us in verse 10, he says, reject a divisive man after the first or second admonition. Do you realize just what is meant by this? There is much that we are to warn about, much that we are to work with brethren about. If someone is caught in a sin, we don't immediately throw them out of the building. We try to go to them. It may be out of weakness. We love them. We express our love and concern. We work with them and we strive to bring them back to Christ. And we may suffer long with them in that attempt to bring them back to Christ, but not here. Because this is such a canker, it's such a cancer to the congregation that in this case, if an individual is being divisive, you warn him. If he continues, you warn him the second time. If he continues after that, then he is self-condemned and you are to withdraw yourself or reject that individual because of his ungodliness and because of the damage that he can do to the congregation. Now, having used the word profanity, I'm going to use the word curse again. We use the word curse and cursing as a means of indicating profanity, but ultimately this is a little bit different. There are references in Scripture of cursing someone. You know, the evil eye or something similar to that. But there are times when God pronounced curses upon people because of their ungodliness. And there are references to that in the Old Testament. But I want to note a passage in Romans chapter 12 that tells us that we are not to avenge ourselves. But rather, we're to give place to wrath. That is, if someone makes you angry, you don't get back at them. And a curse could be a way of doing that. But instead, you give place to wrath because it is God's place. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. And therefore, if your enemy is hungry, well, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. That's your enemy he's talking about here. For in doing so, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. This goes back to what James said in 3 and verse 10. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. And my brethren, these things ought not to be so. And then we continue and we talk about hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. What does that mean? Have you ever heard about speaking out of both sides of your mouth? Saying something to one individual and saying something completely different to another? That's a way of showing your hypocrisy, your willingness to get ahead by not showing your true self, by putting on airs or being false. We're told in Proverbs 11 and verse 9 that the hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor. It is through knowledge that the righteous will be delivered. And so a hypocrite can truly cause problems. And he can cause problems in the church by being hypocritical in his speech. And then we have what we might refer to as hateful speech. And so you just don't like someone and you let them know it. I've seen a number of occasions of this. There have been times when I have seen it that was involving profanity as well. But they were mad at each other. They hated each other. And so they spoke out against each other in very evil terms. And that kind of thing is not right. Speaking out of anger is never a good idea. You've heard the old bromide, if you're angry, count to 10 before you say anything. And for some of us, it may be that we need to count to 100 before we say anything in order to avoid hateful speech. Ephesians 4 and verse 31, we're told to let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And in Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 12, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. And that gets us to the last point. And I want to spend just a moment more on this, just so that you'll recognize what I'm talking about. Euphemisms. The word euphemism comes from the Greek good speech. So, well, what's wrong with good speech? Well, what a euphemism actually is substituting a less offensive, a less harsh, a less troublesome word with a nicer word in order to be less offensive. And not all euphemisms are bad. We use a number of euphemisms in the New Testament and in the Old Testament. Let me give you just an example. And this has to do with death. Okay? What Joshua, he went to the people of Israel and he didn't say, "I'm going to die." His phrase was, "I'm going the way of all the earth." And so there's a reference to death, but it is in a slightly less offensive way, and yet, or a slightly less troublesome way, I suppose, to the children of Israel on this occasion. And yet everybody knew what he was talking about, didn't they? In the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 18, Paul was addressing the error of the Corinthians and their belief that there was no such thing as a resurrection. He said, "If there is no such thing as a resurrection, those who have fallen asleep in Christ have perished." Well, falling asleep, he didn't mean going to sleep. Every time you go to sleep and you wake back up, you're gone. It means dying. That's a euphemism for that term. Nothing absolutely wrong with it, but it is childless. It is childish. Misread that. It is childish and something that children often do to substitute a word that means the exact same thing as a profane word or a curse to God to shock and to do the same things that we mentioned before, but God's going to be okay with it because I didn't say that word, I said another word. Because what does that do? Yeah, you use a different word, a quote, more mild word, a less offensive word, but you bring an individual's mind straight to and directly to the concept that you want them to know. And so if you're cursing them out, but you use less offensive words, it doesn't change the fact that you're cursing them out. If you use various euphemisms instead of profanities with regard to sexual references, with regard to scatological humor, it doesn't change the fact that as soon as you say it, a person's mind goes directly to that more offensive word. In effect, what you're trying to do is get around God's condemnation of filthy language. I've always wondered about that. Why sometimes as Christians we get up to that edge, we look to a loophole to get around what God has said we can't do. And so what I'm basically saying is stop trying to get around God's condemnation of filthy language and recognize euphemisms of profanity for what they are. They are something that are displeasing to God. And so as we draw our lesson to a close, I want to note two things. The Bible calls us to holy speech to please Him and to be a good example. We're told in Ephesians 4, verse 29, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers." In chapter 5 of Ephesians 3 and 4, "Fornication, all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks." And finally, Colossians 4, 6, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." And then, secondly, we have to be on guard. We can't tame the tongue. And so it's like a wild animal. It's always going to be a wild animal. We can cage it. We can whip it into submission. But we've always got to be on guard against our tongue that we may not sin with our speech. David in Psalm 39 in verse 1 said this. He said, "I will guard my ways lest I sin with my tongue, and I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle." Sometimes that's exactly what we need to do. Thank you so much for your kind attention today. I hope that these words have been beneficial to us and to you. We are going to offer an invitation at this point in time if there is anyone here. We said that that's the one thing we'll stop things for, is if you have a need to get your life right with God, or we can help you at any way at this time. We offer that opportunity right now. If there is a need, would you come now while together we stand while we sing?